Welcome to TYT. I'm Anna Kasparian. Joining me today are Jimmy Dore and John Iadarola. Obviously, Cenk is still out of town and will continue to be out of town for a couple of weeks. But the show must go on. So we have a ton of stories to get to, including a number of conservatives, both in the United States and in the UK, calling for internment camps. Because that's what we need in society, internment camps. Anyway, we'll get to that story later. But before we get to all of that, how you guys doing?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Yeah.
I am in a fiery mood. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, good. I get to watch.
I don't know how good it is, but you guys, I guess, can judge for yourselves by the end of the show. Anyway, yeah. So are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's do it. Remember to use the hashtag TYTLive to tweet to us during the show, and we will read some of your responses online. All right. A huge international story that didn't seem to get much play in the United States involved a gigantic terrorist attack in Kabul, which claimed the lives of as many as 150 people. Now, this terrorist attack was done in the form of a bomb during rush hour, and that's the reason why so many people died as a result. Over 150 entirely innocent Afghan sons and daughters were killed, and more than 300 were brought to hospitals with burns, lacerations, and amputations. So these are Muslim victims of extreme terrorism, and so many people died, but yet no one seems to really care about it or talk about it. There's no moment of silence for the 150 innocent women and children and families that have died as a result of this terrorist attack. It's not on anyone's radar because, hey, they're not from the Western world, they're not Americans, they're not from the UK, so who cares? The bombing took place during Wednesday morning's rush hour when a truck exploded in the diplomatic zone of central Kabul. The blast shattered windows at the presidential palace. Also, Afghanistan's intelligence service believes the Haqqani network, a Taliban affiliated group in Pakistan, carried out the attack. Yeah. Now, this Taliban affiliated group is angry at the fact that even though the United States pulled out of Afghanistan in 2014, there's still a pretty strong US military presence there. And so they're retaliating as a result of that. At least that's one of the theories behind this attack. But regardless of what their motivation was, it was brutal, it was deadly, it was incredibly violent. And I think that it just goes to show you that it's important to emphasize that there are Muslims who are the victims of this type of terrorism as well, yet no one seems to really care much about the terrorism that they have to deal with.
And are generally an incredibly high percentage of the victims of terrorism. But yeah, I don't doubt that the US presence has some effect on it, but it seems like this is pretty classic terrorism. It's an attempt to destabilize the government so that the Taliban can get as much power as possible. I mean, when they were talking, The current leader wants to have sort of peace talks because the situation is dire there. And the Taliban responding that there's no point in, it's pointless to have peace talks while a foreign power is within the country. Of course, it's pointless for them because they know that they'll have a stronger negotiating position if the US wasn't, you know, trying to prop up the current regime. And we talked at the production meeting on Monday morning about, it's, you know, bad enough that this situation happened, obviously an incredible death toll from one attack, beyond even as much terrorism as we see these days, remarkable even in that context. But the protests that happened immediately afterward, the security forces coming out and actually shooting into the crowd, taking a situation that was already horrendous and making it worse, there's going to be an incredible amount of pressure on the government.
There is, and there are calls for, you know, the Afghan leader to step down because of this huge terrorist attack that did claim the lives of 150 people. And I understand why they would want that. But I think that this also provides an example of how important it is for Americans to really rethink their foreign policy, right? Because in a case like this, instead of demonizing people who have also been victimized by terrorism, You reach out and you ask them to help join the fight against terrorism, right? Don't demonize them, don't antagonize them. They're dealing with this the same way people in the United States, well, actually to a higher extent than people in the United States are. And so you want to reach across, you know, the ocean and just essentially tell them, like, we want to work with you instead of demonizing them. But unfortunately, that's not the type of rhetoric that we're seeing, and it's not the type of foreign policy that we're carrying out.
Well, I think that this is, though, this is a really important opportunity for President Trump to target the mayor of Kabul on Twitter and to attack him needlessly. I think that there's a new opening. I think he can accomplish a lot.
You know what's interesting to me is that the president, the current president of Afghanistan, says that this in the past, that this misperception that was an American war, and that illusion should be finished. I mean, so what does he mean? It's I don't know what it does that mean exactly. I don't know.
He means that they can't rely on America to try to resolve the situation there. That in the same way that America has been saying that for a long time. It took a long time for them to get the lesson that we can't go in and fix these problems, some of which have been simmering for decades or hundreds of years. But that the regional allies, the people who are much more familiar with the culture, have more of a shared history, theoretically can come together to solve the situation.
So
he doesn't want to rely on America, and he probably shouldn't rely on America.
By the way, you guys should continue this conversation, but we do have some video of the scene. It is extremely graphic, so for those of you who get queasy looking at blood, I just want to give you that fair warning. But for those of you who want to see what the scene looked like, let's go to the video. It's B-roll, so you guys continue.
So I saw the Brad Pitt movie recently, War Machine, and it was about Afghanistan, and it really was about the banality of killing. And just how it doesn't make sense, and it's all about they talked about how there's two types of generals, one who questions what they do always, and there's the other ones who never do and just always keep going. Mm-hmm. And of course, who do you think rises to the top, right? The ones who never question what they're doing and always. And so it just that's gross. And so they say we're in a worse position now as far as the United States fighting the Taliban, that the Taliban has actually expanded and we're in worse position than we have been in years, right? Mm-hmm. And so we officially pulled out, yet we maintain 8,400 troops, which is a lot, right?
And there are calls for Trump to increase military presence in Afghanistan.
Well, and they've been talking about that since the inauguration. Mm-hmm. There's always been this whispering that they're going to do it. I mean, there was the dropping of the Moab or whatever, but he is interested, despite all this talk about America first and all that. He said he was the most militaristic person on the face of the earth back during the campaign. He might well have an opportunity to prove it.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything to be encouraged by. I just think that the little encouragement is that the president of Afghanistan is reaching out to the world.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's good. That's good to see. I don't know if that'll do anything. I don't know how much longer we're going to stay there, right? We've been there, it's going on almost 16 years, right? It's going to be 17 years.
All I know is our military presence, our preemptive wars, our foreign policy overall has not been effective. Global terrorism is worse today than it was when we, launched a preemptive war into, Iraq. And I'm not saying that as a way of trying to amplify military intervention. I'm just saying that what we're doing right now isn't working. And I know it's a little conspiratorial, but I think that it's intentionally set up that way. Because you amplify these wars, you perpetuate war, and there's a big industry there that continues to profit off of it, right? I don't think that the US is genuinely interested in stopping global terror. Because if they were, they would look at the gigantic case study that they have right in front of them showing that our military intervention, our drone strikes, everything that we've been doing has only made matters worse. Wouldn't you, as an intelligent person, take a step back, just reanalyze what you're doing and kind of switch gears? But we haven't done that. If anything, we've expanded Bush era foreign policy that's been completely disastrous, and I don't see it getting any better under Trump.
Yeah. So bear in mind, but Obama, he left 8,400 troops there, but 8,400 is a lot less than 20 or 50 or 100,000 troops. I mean, he did try to pull out quite a bit. And look, I agree. I don't think that anything we have done in Afghanistan from the very beginning has worked. But there are concerns that people on the left or on the right could have that theoretically, if we didn't have the 8,400 there, then the Taliban might be even more free to launch terror attacks like this in civilian packed areas. I don't know. I'm not an expert in Afghanistan. There's almost none in media. I'm one who will admit that I'm not one. But it could be that with even fewer troops that it'd be more likely. Or the opposite could be true. It's an incredibly complicated situation.
It is complicated.
Going to your point, though, I just want to say that it's also encouraging to see that the when Jeremy Corbyn in the UK talks about what their part in the terror attacks are, meaning that a lot of people now in the UK, unlike here, are starting to realize that if you invade Libya and you kill people and you turn it into a failed state, that there's going to be some blowback for that. Or if you do the same thing to Iraq, there's going to be some blowback to that. So now those people are finally understanding. So that's good. It took a lot of courage for Jeremy Corbyn to say that. He's also talking about why are we arming Saudi Arabia, and we know they're dropping cluster bombs on fishing villages in Yemen.
That's right.
Why are we doing that? So Rand Paul has been bringing that question up here in America. So it's good to see, but with no traction. So it's good to see it's getting a little traction. And so to your point, that people are starting to rethink it.
Right.
They are starting like, hey, we got, you know, the thing.
Some people are. But the type of conversations that you see playing out in the media in the United States
is no
very
good.
Different. Very, right?
No, but the thing about the UK is they had such a history with dealing with terrorism because of the IRA, mm-hmm. right? So that's not all that new, right? So they have history with that. Okay.
Yep. All right. Just switching gears to some more international coverage. Donald Trump's attacks and rhetoric geared toward longtime allies of the United States is leading to some blowback and also to some international fallout. Case in point, his Twitter exchange with the mayor of London. He essentially accused the mayor of London of, you know, minimizing what just happened with the terrorist attack on the London Bridge. And of course, Mayor Sadiq Khan did not minimize it. He just called for people in the area to not be alarmed by an increased police presence, right? Just everybody stay calm, increased police presence, nothing to worry about. We got it under control. Trump, of course, twisted that tweet to make it seem as though Khan was minimizing what happened. Well, okay, so what's going on now? Sadiq Khan is now calling for a stop to any visit by Donald Trump. They don't want to host Donald Trump. Let's go to the video where he talks about this in more detail.
Would you like the state visit to be called off?
Well, my position remains the same. You know, I don't think we should be rolling out the red carpet to the president of the USA in the circumstances where his policies go against everything we stand for. I think one of the things when you have a special relationship, it's no different to when you've got a close mate. You stand with them in times of adversity, but you call them out when they're wrong. And there are many things about which Donald Trump is wrong.
So again,
that's an understatement.
Mayor of London dealing with a huge tragedy in an area that he represents, trying to handle the situation, and Donald Trump attacks him. And I said this on the show yesterday, I think that Donald Trump specifically attacked him and specifically twisted his words on Twitter because he is a Muslim mayor, and it was a way of earning some cheap political brownie points among his base. Other than that, there was no reason for him to do it. The mayor did nothing wrong. He's just telling people to stay calm, which, by the way, is the right course of action, because what do you want to do? Do you want to tell people to freak out?
Yeah, well, let me defend the value of panic. Yeah, he was doing exactly what you should do and exactly what every mayor, every governor, every president does when there's a terror attack. You don't want people to freak out, both because it's theoretically dangerous and also because it gives the terrorists what they want. And so Donald Trump, in advocating for more horror and more terror, is trying to amplify the effect of the terrorists there. Yeah, and in terms of calling off the state visit, this is only the latest call for that. I mean, when he had talked a few months ago about going to the UK, there were concerns then. He routinely insults the UK, Brits specifically. I don't know why, as an individual there, you would want him to go. And if he does go, I think there are going to be massive protests.
Right, and look, there probably will be massive protests. But this isn't just about, you know, what's happening with London's mayor. It's more about the loose talk, the rhetoric that you're seeing from Donald Trump, how he antagonizes longtime allies of the United States. And for anyone who's like, yeah, America first, we don't need any allies. No, you need American allies. You definitely need allies, right? And so, why are you needlessly going out and attacking people? I mean, it's ridiculous. And by the way, it doesn't stop with the mayor of London. So when Donald Trump decided to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord, he gave a speech where he decided to attack India, right? So let me give you his quote. He says, India makes its participation contingent on receiving billions and billions and billions of dollars in foreign aid from developed countries. India will be allowed to double its coal production by 2020. Think of it, India can double their coal production. We're supposed to get rid of ours. Okay, so that was all based on complete lies. First of all, here's what the truth is. India does produce CO2 emissions largely due to its oil its coal production, or coal use, I should say. However, they are specifically part of this climate agreement because they want to lessen their dependence on coal, okay? So India is aiming for a target of 40% renewable energy by 2030, including a commitment to generate 100 gigawatts of solar-based power by 2020, okay? And in terms of receiving billions upon billions of dollars, I don't know where he got that figure from, but one of the great things about this climate accord is that countries who participate do get some financial help in moving toward renewable energy, right? Which could help create jobs in renewable energy. So in other words, intelligent world leaders want to be part of this because they realize there are resources available to move toward renewable energy, create more jobs, and obviously improve the economy of that given country. But Donald Trump is too much of an idiot to realize that, and instead decides to mischaracterize India and also again attack another country for no reason at all.
Yeah, I liked the stat. I apologize if you were gonna say it. Did you have the per capita?
Go ahead.
So in per capita terms, their pollution is their 128th most polluting country in the world. Slightly above the Republic of Moldova. So get it together, Moldova, come on. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, look, yeah. it's obviously a huge and rapidly growing country. So no matter what they do, it's gonna have big effects. And if they are relying on coal, that's gonna be really bad. Why wouldn't you want to then speed up the process of transitioning to renewable energy? Whether you could do it for pragmatic and practical terms, because it could be a huge boon to solar panel producers, which could theoretically be in the US, but now thanks to Donald Trump are slightly more likely to come from China. You could do it for that reason, so you could do it because it's better overall. The burden on the US to lower our carbon emissions will be less if we can assist all other countries in achieving their goals and exceeding them. That's why it's a joint effort. We all benefit as everybody contributes.
We all benefit. And I just have to get this out. Donald Trump saying like, it's a bad deal. We need to renegotiate this deal. It's a bad deal. No, there's no one to renegotiate with. Every country sets its own standards.
It's not even really a deal.
It's not a deal, right? It's like a non-binding commitment that all these countries made. Essentially saying we care about the environment, we want to move towards saving it, we want to move toward renewable energy. But again, I don't think he even knows or has any idea what that agreement entailed. Mm. I don't think he knows.
I think it's like, I don't know, there's a lot of analogies, but like Ivanka comes home and says, Dad, I want to go to a purity ball. That's a bad deal. I think you should get a better, like you sign up for like a Secret Santa, bad deal. Gotta get a better deal.
Everything's a bad deal.
Jackass, it's a voluntary thing. It's about community building, you moron.
So, and also the good news is out of India that they have a goal of 40% renewal by 2030. They're way ahead of schedule to meet that.
Right.
And what has helped them be way ahead of schedule to meet that is that solar is now cheaper than coal.
That's right.
Now it's cheaper than coal in India. So look, it's gonna be happening.
Yeah, and for those who were previously employed by the coal industry and you lost your job because we're moving away from coal, I get it. Change is difficult, it's hard, especially when it affects, you know, your ability to provide for your family. However, Trump is actually hurting you because those coal jobs are not coming back because coal is so extremely expensive to produce. And so you would be better suited to have the support of our government to move toward renewable energy, whether it's solar or wind, right? Creating those jobs is so incredibly important for our people. And unfortunately, we have a misguided president who's moving away from any type of progress that we might have made over the last couple of years.
I think the biggest thing holding back the growth of the solar industry in the US is that the people who work in the solar industry are solar industry workers and not coal workers. Mm-hmm. Solar industry workers are animals. They're meaningless vermin, basically. Coal workers are gods among us for some reason. It's an industry that employs as much as like a couple of Arby's, and they're people and they have value and they need to be looked out for and retrained and all of that. That's totally true. But their influence in American politics, there's nothing more outsized than the influence of the coal industry.
It is pretty amazing.
I mean, the
amazing.
Growth of solar or wind or, I mean, Tesla, I read Tesla is hiring more people than the entire coal industry
is
right now.
Is that how you say it? It's Tesla? Or is it Tesla?
I had to give you
my
point
time.
Was meaningless because of the mispronunciation.
No. You make a really
damn
good point.
My mouth.
You make a really good point.
I tried to, but I effed it up.
You fucking hear this guy? He said Tesla.
Tesla. What the fuck? Like one of the biggest fans of that company, by the way. Okay.
I'm gonna check that actually. Anyway.
All right. By the way, one other thing that I wanted to mention. So yes, the environmental. Or lack of environmental measures by the Trump administration is misguided. But the heart of this story is the international fallout, is the fact that he's making enemies out of allies needlessly.
Yes.
And you know, the foreign minister for India decided to release a statement essentially defending the country. She said the following, India signed the Paris Agreement not because of pressure from any country nor greed. We signed the agreement because of our commitment to protecting the environment. What an animal, wow. So that's what's happening. And of course, keep in mind, Trump has also antagonized Germany. I mean, what other country?
France,
it just goes on and on. Great job.
He had a great handshake with Japan.
Oh yeah, that's true, the pulling one.
Oh
God.
Anyway, all right guys, let's take our first break. When we come back, more stories for you, including the story that I promised, conservatives calling for internment camps. It's crazy, come right back. Welcome back to TYT, Anna, Jimmy, and John with you. Jimmy John's, that's like a place for
that's
for
a sandwich place.
For sandwiches and political analysis.
That I do not go to.
Why do I not go to
it? That guy who owns it is not, he's a, you know, one of those guys, he tries to, doesn't want to give healthcare to his people. So one of those.
They all
it's
are.
Like Papa John's.
Yeah, it's like Papa John's, I don't eat Papa John's either.
I don't go to Jimmy John's because their bread's weird. There's something wrong with that bread.
I agree.
Ain't right.
I agree, it does, it's like a synthetic bread.
Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Well, and bread
right.
needs healthcare.
Well, they won't diagnose it because it doesn't have the proper healthcare
can't.
Coverage. that was a ridiculous joke. Okay. So we have some announcements for you guys. So let me go ahead and tell you what they are. First of all, post game live today after the main show. I don't know why I was instructed to announce that. You guys should know that by now.
But who's
TYT
on
old
it?
School. It's gonna be me, Brett, and Kim if I can coerce them into staying after the second hour. But regardless, I'll be there. So it'll be a fun post game. TYT Old School will not be shooting this week, but it will be back next week. In the meantime, you can watch any existing episode if you are a member by going to tytnetwork.com. And if you're not a member, just go to tytnetwork.com/join, and that is where you can join. Now, I do want to do some member shout outs because you guys are amazing and you keep us independent. Valeria Chuba and Eric Johnson, you guys are the member shout outs for the day. And then finally, some TYT lives. Sabrina Hartman agrees with me, which is why I'm gonna go ahead and read her tweet. Yes, Anna hit the nail on the head, the war machine's running how it's meant to, and no one's actually wanting to stop it. Democracy and Chill says, remember how dropping the Moab on caves was supposed to degrade extremist capabilities? How'd that work out?
Not supposed to, it did, okay. Did you see how big it was? It was huge,
so big.
So it's gigantic.
It was the biggest.
No complaints about the Moab, believe me.
They're just big, beautiful Moabs.
Everybody said it was the biggest.
It was. Okay.
I called everybody and they swore it was the biggest so they could go back to sleep.
Although there is one that's bigger than the Moab. There is. Okay. I remember what? Looking into it. I forget at the moment. But anyway.
It's called the Christie.
That's And then finally, Chris Allen, I love the simplicity of this tweet and it's completely true. Donald Trump
nice gap,
as president is the worst deal America has made.
Oh, bad
Ooh.
Deal.
Mm. Mm. The Christie.
All right.
Oh my God.
All right. Several Middle Eastern countries have cut their ties with Qatar, and Donald Trump wants to take all the credit for that and more. Now, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain accused Qatar of supporting terrorism and cut diplomatic ties with the nation. Yemen, the Maldives, and Libya's eastern-based government also broke off relations with Qatar. So essentially what they said was, hey, you know, Qatar is very transparent and open about supporting Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. And so as a result, we got to cut diplomatic ties, because a country like Saudi Arabia would never want to sponsor terrorism, right? Anyway, so Donald Trump has taken credit for this recent development in the Middle East. He tweeted with the following statement: "During my recent trip to the Middle East, I stated that there can be no longer be funding of radical ideology. Leaders pointed to Qatar. Look."
Oh, okay. And yet Steve Bannon still draws a salary. Yeah. Weird.
So good to see that Saudi Arabia, the Saudi Arabia visit with the king and 50 countries already paying off. They said they would take a hard line on funding, extremism, and all reference was pointing to Qatar. Perhaps this will be the beginning of the end to the horror of terrorism. Won't be.
So he obviously is trying to get credit for it and trying to imply that he had something to do with it. But even inside of that, he has to keep saying all reference was to Qatar, as if he doesn't believe his own point and he needs to buttress it inside of the tweets themselves. But let's keep it real. He doesn't know the first thing about this region or that country in particular.
He knows nothing.
If Megyn Kelly gets to interview him, please just sit him down and say, so could you just say three facts about Qatar? Just three. It could be anything about the cuisine, about the transportation system, anything. Three facts about it. And he would draw a blank. In fact, if you said a couple sentences, he wouldn't remember which country you were asking about.
So you guys might think, oh, come on, John's being hyperbolic, he's being unfair. Trump must know something. And by the way, Qatar has been transparent in its support of Hamas. And if you have problems with that, I completely understand, right? However, keep in mind that this issue is extremely complex, and very clearly, it's very clear that Trump doesn't understand how complex it is. So why is it complex? Well, Qatar actually does serve a purpose as somewhat of a US ally. So Qatar hosts the largest US airbase in the region, and we use that airbase in order to strike ISIS in Iraq and Syria. So just something to keep in mind, right? And so Trump is on Twitter, you know, talking about how terrible Qatar is, while the Defense Department is like, Qatar, you know, we really thank Qatar for their help in letting us use this airbase and allowing us to carry out these, you know, counterterrorism missions. So the Pentagon moved toward damage control and thanked Qatar for hosting US forces and its enduring commitment to regional security.
Yeah.
That is a quote.
And Rex Tillerson too was trying to say, you know, we're going to try to get them back at the negotiating table, try to get past this little rift. I mean, there's similarities too when he was undercutting his own Justice Department's legal case about the travel ban.
Right.
It's like having Donald Trump as your president when you're in the executive branch is like challenge mode. Like, he always has to make things a little bit more difficult to accomplish what are supposedly his goals. And he certainly doesn't understand, even if maybe someone's explained to him how complicated the situation is, the influence of Iran and the different regimes, and you know, whether Saudi Arabia likes one family or likes another family, whether he gets any of that, he certainly doesn't understand how long it is. The idea that Saudi Arabia, who's had a relationship with Qatar for obviously a very long time,
yes,
suddenly sat down with Trump and after one conversation said, you know what, we're cutting off relations with Qatar and we're going to convince all these other countries to do it. As if that wasn't the culmination of a long process of diplomacy and considerations about the military situation. What are the economic ramifications, which are huge, all of that. He thinks, oh, he said stop funding radical ideology and it's done.
Yeah, look, international relations reminds me of high schoolers. Right? No, but it is. I mean, if you really think about it in simplistic terms, right? So for a long time, Saudi Arabia had no problems with Hamas. In fact, Saudi Arabia funded Hamas itself. So let me give you some details on that. Let's go to graphic 25. This is according to the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. They reported that Saudi Arabia funded the majority of Hamas's operations between 2000 and 2004 and only began to scale back support for Hamas in 2004 due to US pressure. Now Hamas is trying to cozy up to Saudi Arabia again, but it's important to keep in mind that obviously Israel is against Hamas for very understandable reasons, and Saudi Arabia is trying to draw a bit of an alliance with Israel, and so all of a sudden they're openly criticizing, you know, Qatar funding Hamas. the reason why I'm bringing all of this up is because it reminds me of high school conflict, right? Where Sandy used to be friends with Pam, but then Pam all of a sudden was friends with Mandy, and then Mandy doesn't like Sandy. It's just, it's ridiculous, right?
But who's the Houthi rebels in this?
I don't even remember the names that I just said right now, right? And I'm not trying to, you know, apply girl names to these specific countries, but it's all complicated. There's a lot of context and nuance that it seems as though Trump hasn't followed along with. And it's just, it's worrying because even if you have problems with, you know, what Qatar supports, I mean, it's kind of irresponsible to immediately blow them off as they support terrorism and we don't need them at all. And like, it's because of me that they cut diplomatic ties. Okay, look into the country and see whether or not that's the right statement to make publicly.
Yeah. So I just wish Congress would hurry up and impeach Trump so we can get rid of these distractions and get down to the real business of impeaching Pence.
Impeaching what?
Pence.
And then you know what? After that, we'll relax. We'll further impeachments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just keep on going down the line.
I mean,
Oh, and then one final thing. So for those of you who are wondering why Trump seems to be a little soft on Saudi Arabia, well, graphic 14. The Trump International Hotel received $270,000 from a lobbying campaign tied to the government of Saudi Arabia last year, according to a filing submitted to the Justice Department just last week. Yeah. Now, MSL Group, which again is a lobbying arm affiliated with Saudi Arabia, was helping Saudi Arabia with several lobbying efforts, including opposing the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, which allows the families of 9/11 victims to sue Saudi Arabia. Why would the victims of 9/11, why would the family members of 9/11 victims want to sue Saudi Arabia? That's weird. Could it be because Saudi Arabia played a role in 9/11? Possibly.
So I read that, remember when Barack Obama flew to Saudi Arabia and he had to cover that Saudi Arabia, what they had threatened? They had threatened to take all their holdings of our treasuries, right, our securities. And you know, there was all these different amounts that people said. I heard an amount was $750 billion. That's a lot, right?
That would be a ton.
Pretty close to $1 trillion that they were just gonna take out. And so that was, and then there's more to that too, I guess, you know. So, you know, the petrodollar is a very interesting thing, isn't it? It's hard to wrap my brain around exactly, and it's about how they monetize oil in US dollars, right? That's a big deal. That's why we get to keep printing our money and all that. So I don't pretend to know all the ins and outs of it, but that is really why we are buddied up with Saudi Arabia, right? I mean, that's
we
have video of John Kerry in his Senate testimony saying that the Arab states, he didn't mention which one, had offered to pay for the entire bill of us if we overthrew Assad. That's what he said. So, and that's at the behest of the Arab states. I'm going to guess that's Saudi Arabia, right?
Yeah.
So, okay.
But one of the things is you referenced the $270,000, which thankfully watchdog groups are, that's why we have this, is because they're doing those investigations. And there are concerns that theoretically he's going to modify policy based on these sorts of financial transactions. They announced, once this was revealed, that they're going to be giving that money to the Treasury Department by the end of the year. Which is interesting. I mean, I guess you could have a policy where you just take all that money at the end of the year, you hand it over, but you got the money last fall. Why didn't you give it over at the end of last year then in that case?
Interest?
Weird.
Get some
it's
interest.
Almost as if you would have just kept that money if we hadn't revealed it. Thank God there are so many organizations and individuals continually trying to get this information.
Right, exactly. And trying to mitigate some of the conflict of interest issues that are at stake here. And this is just one example of that.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to some other news. Trump's administration will be the third White House in a row that aims to cut anti-terrorism funding to various major cities throughout the country. Now, again, this is the third straight White House, so this is not blame that's placed specifically on Trump. George W. Bush did the same, Obama did the same, and now Trump is aiming to do the same. Now, the proposed budget would cut cash for the program from $605 million to nearly $449 million for the fiscal year beginning October 1st and require cities such as New York, Los Angeles, and Las Vegas to pay 25% of the grants. So the White House is essentially saying, look, why don't the states take on more of the financial burden of fighting terrorism, right? And that's a fair point. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because look how incredibly disingenuous our politicians are. And it doesn't matter if it's a Democratic politician or a Republican politician, the fear mongering about terrorism and how they need to be strong with national security continues on and on. But behind the scenes, they're cutting funding for these anti-terrorism programs, right? Mm-hmm. Now look, I'm not even having an argument about whether or not these programs are effective or if they should be there, but it's just a huge disconnect in messaging. There's the fear mongering on one hand and then the cut for funding on the other hand. Mm-hmm. I just think it's super interesting. I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah.
It's more than interesting. It shows that maybe this war on terror isn't really about terror. Maybe this war on terror is about what you alluded to earlier, that maybe we have a war machine, that there's profit in war. We have a death economy. And so that's what maybe this is about, because that's what it looks like. It's like, if you guys are really serious about stopping terror, why? So you're going to put $55 billion into more bombs and take away the actual work of trying to prevent, right? Mm-hmm. So you're all about making bombs and dropping them and killing people, but you don't want to prevent stuff from happening. You're going to take the funding away from that. That's suspicious, and it looks like exactly what it is to me, that there is, we have not resisted the undue influence of the military-industrial complex.
That's right. Now, go ahead.
I would just say, I don't know the exact details of how this is spent in every place, but there's some examples of how they would spend it. I mean, devil's advocate, if this money is being spent on constructing command centers, active shooter training, probably buying MRAPs and rifles and all that stuff, a lot of that stuff would go to defense contractors and other sorts of contractors. I mean, theoretically, if they were still giving that money, it would then go to elements of the military-industrial complex.
It would.
It's smaller amounts of money, certainly.
But I think that's just one part of it. The equipment is just one part of it. I think they're funding programs and things like that, which doesn't necessarily mean hardware.
Yeah, that is true.
Also, like the active shooter training, but I'm imagining those sorts of groups. Like, I know Giuliani was involved with a lot of those sorts of contractors who provide those sorts of training, not just in the U.S. but to other cities, and they get lucrative government contracts.
No, they do, and who knows? You know, who knows what's going on behind the scenes? Maybe they just think it's smarter to have the money go straight to defense contractors and private contractors as opposed
to more efficient,
to,
I guess.
Yeah, it's more efficient rather than having the money go to these major cities that could be the target of, you know, terrorist plots. But regardless, I'm not even really concerned about, you know, the effectiveness of the program. What I'm more concerned about is just the propaganda that we get fed day in and day out. And while someone like Donald Trump fearmongers about terrorism and boasts about how he's going to be very strong on national security, behind the scenes, just like the two presidents that preceded him, he wants to cut the funding for these programs that would help these major cities. So just something to keep in mind. I think it's super interesting.
Oh, and just one other thing to reference a story that we covered, I believe, a couple of months ago. Trump also cut all of the funding, eliminated the programs that had been set up under Obama, specifically to try to stop radicalization inside of the US, because it wasn't focused on radical Islam. It was focused on white supremacy groups and sovereign citizens and all that.
That's right.
And so he just eliminated those programs wholesale.
That's right.
It's so crazy. All right, let's take another break. When we come back, more news for you guys, including the internment camp story. And then we're going to end the first hour with a super positive story. So you don't want to miss that. Really? Has to do with healthcare. Come right back. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. Anna, Jimmy, and John with you. All right, some TYT lives. Animals are indigent.
What?
Tweets, if you defund the infrastructure that keeps terror out, you can count on more terror to push the population where they want.
Maybe that's it.
And by the way, so we've been saying this since the very beginning. Mm-hmm. It is like we've had some horrific mass shootings and things like that in America, but we still haven't had the big attack that he and his White House, especially Steve Bannon, are waiting for. And as soon as it happens, that's, we had the first period of the Trump administration, and then you'll have the second period of the Trump administration. And just look at how they're going to grab power in the wake of some big terror attack. It's amazing that we've gone this long.
Yeah, I'm genuinely concerned and scared.
He is going to be so excited when it happens.
I hope it doesn't happen. And not for political reasons, but just I don't, God, that would be freaking terrible. And when you take everything into consideration and put everything in context, like the fact that he doesn't trust our intelligence communities, he doesn't want intelligence briefings.
Mm-hmm. He lacks intelligence.
You know, the federal bureaucracy that we have right now is severely understaffed. He hasn't, you know, filled a lot of positions in the Pentagon. Yeah, I mean, those are things that worry me big time. And then finally, woke Poppy says, maybe Trump is cutting anti-terrorism to major cities because most major cities voted Democrat. I don't think that's it. Keep in mind, Obama did the same thing. George W. Bush started this program, but later on in his second term, he actually cut funding for it as well. So I don't see this as like a political play, but I do see that it's, you know, again, a huge disconnect between what they say publicly and then what they do behind closed doors with cutting funding to these programs. All right, moving on to some other news. Following the terrorist attacks in London, there have been a number of members of the conservative media and also conservative politicians who are calling for extreme measures to combat terrorism. Now, usually people learn about history as a way of preventing the repeat of failed policies, terrible policies, embarrassing policies, but not these people. These people look back at the use of internment camps in the United States and think, you know what? That was great. Why don't we do that again? Let's take a look at what Nigel Farage had to say.
And the mood that I get now is we want some real action. We don't just want speeches given outside number 10 Downing Street. We want genuine action. And if there is not action, then the calls for internment will grow. We have over 3,000 people on a sort of known terrorist list, and we're watching and monitoring their activities. But a further 20,000 people, who are persons of interest, namely they're linked in some way to extremist organizations. And unless we see the government getting tough, you will see public calls for those 3,000 to be arrested.
Well, Nigel Farage was not the only person who said that. Let's go to Michael Savage, who is a conservative radio show host here in the US, who's also a firm backer of Donald Trump.
Grande, Ariana Grande, gave another concert in Manchester and raised money for what I don't know what the money was for. Is that a way to fight Islamism? Having another concert? Is that the answer? Of course that's not the answer. But what is the answer? Well, one London politician, one politician from England said we have to put them in camps immediately. And of course, CNN wouldn't go for that. British politician says suspected terrorists should be put in camps. Now, that'll get all of the good liberals in New York very frightened. Why are we going soft on Islamists when they're going hard on the West? I'm asking you a question. How much longer are we going to tolerate them killing us and killing our children? The answer is a very long time, because America is a weak nation. He said he had 1,000 active cases, or DHS did. What does that mean? 1,000 of them are on the list, or there's more than 1,000? Why don't you inter all of them before they run people over on a bridge or stab people in the street? It was done during World War II by a progressive, socialist-oriented president named FDR. How do we know that the internment in World War II didn't help us win the war?
Wow. That is amazing.
So we're going so soft on what did he say? Muslims? Is that who he say we're going soft on?
Terrorists? Islamists.
Islamists. Mm-hmm. That according to airwars.org, in March alone, we killed 1,000 civilians in Syria, Iraq.
Not enough. We should have killed every single one of them, right?
Yeah. Well, technically, okay, you lock up those 3,000, you lower your risk of terrorism, you lock up every human on the planet, then nobody can commit a terror attack.
You know, it's interesting that he brought up people who are on the terrorist watch list, people who are on a watch list, right? However, they haven't been convicted of anything. And those are people that the NRA fights tooth and nail to ensure gun rights to. So I'm curious what Michael Savage and his, you know, conservative propaganda has to say about that.
Well, you lock them up, you still let them have an AR.
You gotta let them have the AR, because, you know, the weapons manufacturers still gotta make their money. Yeah. You know, they gotta make their money. Yeah, this is, he is crazy. Yeah. And I don't understand what you're calling for. So everyone who's Muslim needs to be put in an internment camp? Is that, you think that's going to keep America safe? You think antagonizing innocent Muslims, which we should, by the way, align ourselves with to fight actual terrorism, is the way to go about this, right? Because killing all these innocent civilians has worked out so great for us.
Yeah. So even in that attack that was in Portland,
The stabbing,
right? So the Muslim community immediately rallied and they raised $500,000 for the victims of that, right? And so they've also raised money to help rebuild synagogues that were vandalized and vice versa. Jews helped them with their, so again, that this is just ignorance upon ignorance, and that's all that is.
And by the way, go ahead.
Oh, I read, I don't know if I mentioned on yesterday's show, but after the attacks that just happened in London, I believe it's probably more now, but at that point it was 60 imams and other Muslim religious leaders had come together and said that they will not perform the funeral services for those attackers. Like, they keep saying we want, you know, why aren't moderate Muslims standing up and denouncing them? Oh, they are? Ignore it. Let's just go on as if it didn't happen, because they don't fundamentally care. They think that they're all animals.
They think they're all animals. And also, let's keep it real. This type of language plays into what their audience wants to hear, what their constituents want to hear. And they're playing to that base. And the call for, I mean, internment camps, the fact that we put all these Japanese Americans in internment camps is a scar on American history. It's not something that we're proud of. It's something that we're embarrassed by. And the fact that they're advocating for that just shows, just they're beyond misguided. And by the way, you know, Savage is such a great name for his lot.
Yes.
For him, he mentioned how like, oh, CNN wouldn't be in favor of these internment camps. Guess what? Neither is Fox News. Take a look at Fox and Friends trying to distance themselves from this type of language. It's amazing. Video 7.
But at least Theresa May came out and said, enough is enough. What she hasn't done, what she didn't do, is tell us what we need to hear. And that is that things are going to change completely. That tomorrow, 3,000 people on the watch list are going to be rounded up. We need to hear that 650 jihadis that return to the UK are going to be incarcerated and deported. And we need to hear that Saudi-backed mosques and extreme hate preachers and imams within those mosques are also going to be shut down and deported. That's what regular British people want to hear, what I want to hear. You know, our mayor here, Sadiq Khan, was sworn in on the Quran. He will not call this as Islamic extremism. He will not be honest about the problem we face. And until you can be honest about your problem, you have no hope of dealing with it. So contrary to the messaging that this is a safe city, a safe country, that is not how people...
All right, so you just heard from Katie Hopkins. She was on Fox and Friends calling for internment camps. And then Fox and Friends later said this in regard to internment camps.
Earlier on the show, we had a couple of guests mention the word internment, the idea of internment camps as a possible solution to this. I think I made it well known my feeling on that, which I find reprehensible. But on behalf of the network, I think all of us here find that idea reprehensible here at Fox News Channel. Just to be clear.
No suggestions of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So,
Clayton, it's important to be said.
Wow.
Just to be clear, I'm against the idea. And just to be clear, the rest of Fox would prefer you phrase it differently.
Yeah. Well, look, so I'm glad that they at least said that.
Yes, that's true.
You know, it's at least a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
I don't think we should lock them up, but we should give them typhoid lace blankets.
How do you know that the typhoid lace blankets didn't help with blah, blah, blah?
That's right, with settling the West.
And look, so, you know, Nigel Farage obviously is a guy who at least previously had a lot of political power, so he's somebody. But when he says something and when Michael Savage says something, he's on the radio, nobody cares what he says. That doesn't necessarily matter. But if Trump starts talking like this, there are millions of Americans who listen to him. If you were to take this message and perhaps find some sort of far right, younger, more attractive messenger for this, maybe someone who's popular on Facebook, then maybe it would get some reach. And that's the scary thing, is that we've labored under people like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, who people like sort of, they have fans, but people know that it's disgusting to like these people. But there's this new wave of people who look a little bit more presentable, but believe hardcore racist Islamophobic things. That's what I'm scared about, once they start echoing these calls for internment.
It's disheartening and discouraging. Yeah. All right. I said I would end hour one with some good news, so let's do that story. The legislature in Nevada has approved a radical plan, although I consider it a great plan, to expand its Medicaid coverage to any individual regardless of their demographic or socioeconomic status. Now, this legislation still needs to be signed by the governor, Brian Sandoval, who is a Republican. But keep in mind that Nevada is not a blue state. It's not a red state either. However, it does seem to be a little more right leaning. And to see this type of program passed by the lawmakers in the state is encouraging news. Now, the Nevada legislature passed a bill on Friday that would allow anyone to buy into Medicaid, the program or the public program that covers low income Americans. It would be the first state to open the government run program to all residents, regardless of their income or health status. Also, consider the fact that under this bill, people who qualify for tax credits under the Affordable Care Act would be able to use those credits to buy Medicaid coverage instead. People who don't qualify for anything would be able to use their own money to do the same. The plan would likely sell on Nevada's health insurance marketplace, making it a public option to compete against the private health insurance plans also selling there. Now, just real quick distinction for those of you who are like, why didn't they just expand Medicare? Well, Medicaid reimburses doctors at a lower price, so it does save the state some money. Now, there is a downside to that because some doctors might refuse to take Medicaid, but the vast majority of doctors still take it anyway. But that's the difference. Medicare would have cost the state a lot more.
Yeah, look, I think if this is what passes, then that's great because it both allows more people access to health insurance, which is at the end of the day, beyond ideology, that's the goal, is that people are actually covered. They're not worried about dying unnecessarily, their family's going bankrupt, their business is going under, all of that. That's the goal. And so if this does that, that's awesome. I mean, I think pretty obviously I'd prefer if it was Medicare for all, something like that, because you have access to more doctors. I believe that the public goodwill historically towards Medicare is extremely important in terms of getting more people nationwide to go along with this. Because of Republican efforts and conservative efforts, Medicaid doesn't have the same sort of allure. I think that it's easier to rally people against an idea like this. And so for a number of reasons, I think that a Medicare for all would be better if we could get that going nationally. But while California is working on that, if Nevada wants to work on this and Washington has its own plan, I mean, this is progress. And that's what the states are supposed to be for.
They're
the experimenting rooms of democracy or whatever. And so definitely a good move, especially coming just days after the California proposal.
Let's remember the reason why we don't have a Medicare buy-in for people 55 and older right now is because of the vice presidential nominee of the Democratic Party in 2000, Joe frickin' Lieberman.
Who I had always loved so much.
He was the one who killed it. He wouldn't. Yeah. He would not allow that to happen. That was in the bill. That was part of it. And he said no. And they couldn't do it because they needed to. He was the independent at that time, and they needed him, and he wouldn't do it.
Now, just to buttress John's point, let's go to graphic 24 because more doctors do accept Medicare over Medicaid. A recent federal survey estimates that 68.9% of doctors are accepting new Medicaid patients, compared to 84.7% accepting new patients with private insurance. So that doesn't compare Medicare and Medicaid. But again, Medicare does reimburse doctors at a higher price.
And just to go on to that, and again, I'm not, again, of all the things I'm not an expert on, health policy is one of those things. But if already doctors are accepting Medicaid patients at lower rates with the current number of people who are on Medicaid, which is comparatively low, if you suddenly massively increase that amount, then theoretically that gap could grow larger over time.
And I have no doubt that it will, right?
And I'm not saying not to pass this. I'm saying theoretically there could be better plans, but I'll take this.
Exactly. So that's the way that I look at it. I mean, it is flawed. Obviously, I wish that the lawmakers could do better, but this does prove that there's a hunger for a public option. And that's a great thing.
Public option was polling at roughly 80% when Obamacare was being legislated. So yeah, people don't totally against or for it. But as we learned through the Cambridge study, we don't live in a democracy.
Yeah. It is 80%, but I looked into those numbers and that's not 80% of top donors.
Yeah, right.
So
that's correct.
It's irrelevant. I don't know why you brought it up.
That's right.
All right, guys, that does it for hour one. Thank you to Jimmy and John for joining me. Jimmy?
Can I tell people June 19th, live Jimmy Dore show in Burbank, California. Go to jimmydorecomedy.com.
Awesome. Yeah. And John?
I'm John. I recently started watching Rick and Morty. It's really good. I'm not in it or anything. It's just go watch it. It's funny.
All right. Stick around, guys. When we come back, Brett and Kim will join me, and we will have some great second hour stories. See you soon.